This is the IBJ podcast for the week of October 11th, 2021. I'm your host, Mason King. Over the last 18 months, it has seemed like the pandemic has hastened a lot of reckonings in American culture. Social justice is obviously the biggest example of a movement and a set of deep-seated and long-lived inequities that the nation has been forced to address. You could argue that inequities in childcare, healthcare, and the education system have been thrust to the forefront and inspired action on a national policy level. And perhaps it's fitting that Indianapolis became center stage this spring in a reckoning over college basketball. The city was in the midst of its historic feat of hosting nearly all of the NCAA men's basketball championship when players in the women's championship in San Antonio began to point out on social media how the facilities, their amenities, the food, even the swag bags from the tournament paled in comparison. The posts ignited a national furor over social media, with prominent sports figures calling for change. Indianapolis became ground zero as NCAA officials tried to address the complaints. On March 25th, NCAA leaders said it would conduct an independent equity review of all championships. The results of that review are in, and they include a suggestion from the authors that the men's and women's basketball tournaments lead to a joint Final Four, with their semifinals and finals occurring in the same city on the same weekend. Reaction to this idea has been decidedly mixed, as the NCAA begins early stage discussions about what a joint Final Four might look like. Now, this is sure to have an impact on Indianapolis, which traditionally is in a fairly tight rotation of cities that host the men's Final Four. Some are skeptical that the city has what it takes to adequately host both championships at the same time. For this week's podcast, we have two guests who will explore the joint championship concept and whether it could fly in Indianapolis. IBJ sports and hospitality reporter Mickey Shuey, who has a story on these questions in the latest issue of IBJ, and Michelle Perry, who for 10 years was the NCAA's director of Division I women's basketball. Mickey is up first, and then we'll be joined by Michelle. Here's our conversation. I'm pleased to welcome IBJ's Mickey Shuey to the podcast. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me today, Mason.
So can we back up for a second and look at how the men's and women's tournaments currently work? This is my memory of it. Each tournament is 3 weeks long with six main rounds of play, with each culminating in like a semifinal and the championship game and what they would call the Final Four. Now, how are the tournaments different?
So the tournaments really are different in how they start. First off, the men's tournament does have a first four round where there's four games usually played at the University of Dayton Arena. This year they were played at Mackey Arena and Assembly Hall because of the single site solution for the tournament. But beyond that, the men's tournament is generally played all in neutral sites. While the women's tournament is played, it starts out at campus locations for the first two rounds before shifting to neutral locations during regional play. Additionally, the men's semifinals and final are usually held in a covered football stadium, such as Lucas Oil Stadium or AT&T Stadium in Dallas, Arlington area. And the women's Final Four is usually held in large basketball arenas, such as what's now Gainbridge Fieldhouse here in Indianapolis.
Now, how would this suggestion work to hold both the men's and the women's Final Fours in the same city on the same weekend? For example, would they end up playing in the same venue?
It's really early on, so all that's still being worked out. But from what I understand, from what they've said, they would still stick with the same regiment that they've had over the past several years, which is the men play in the football stadium, the women play in the basketball arena. And I'm sure we'll get to the reasons why here in a bit. But they would plan alternating days. So the women's Final Four is usually held on Friday. The men's Final Four games are usually held on Saturday. And then the championships are on Sunday and Monday, respectively. That's the approach that they seem like they want to keep with. What the question is how would they work in the traditional concerts and ancillary events that surround the Final Four, especially on the men's side. How would that work in a single-site solution?
Okay, so that's something I wasn't thinking about. So, yeah, there are all these ancillary events that surround the Final Four. There's a lot of corporate entertaining. There's concerts. I mean, a lot of opportunities for people who just want to be in town, get to see and do things. Do the women also have that, but maybe just on a smaller scale?
They do, and it's definitely on a smaller scale than the men. I mean, in one of the reports, the Desser Sports Media Report, found that there really weren't a ton of activations surrounding the women's Final Four compared to the men. And we won't get into the nitty-gritty of that here today, but there really are a lot of what the report called missed opportunities in the women's game for activations such as concerts, pop-up locations for broadcasts, fan experiences that we really do see on a regular basis with the men's tournament that really actually became popularized through Indianapolis several years back.
So is the thinking that since you would have all of the infrastructure for these kinds of events and you would have all of, you know, the big corporate players, I would assume, you know, at a men's event, that to hold the women's event in conjunction would help them be able to leverage that those opportunities?
So what we're seeing with that is that the NCAA is in a way looking at possibly subsidizing, I guess, for lack of a term, the women's championship through the men's activations that are already here or already in a host city. And the goal of that is to basically bring the women's game up to where the NCAA would like it to be, thinks it should be. But as we'll talk about, there are some questions about whether that is actually the goal that it's accomplishing.
And one of the other complications that you mentioned was the venues. So my understanding from your story is that there are only about a dozen cities in the United States have both kinds of venues. They have the big football stadium and then maybe your regulation size NBA arena, with Indianapolis being on the list but being one of the smallest. Is that right?
Yes. So we're looking at cities like Atlanta. We're looking at New Orleans, Dallas-Arlington area. Now with their new SoFi Stadium that just opened this season, Los Angeles area is on that list again. And it's been a while since they've hosted a men's or a women's Final Four in Los Angeles. But really, the list is extremely small. It was already small anyway for the men's and or women's Final Fours. But with this combined solution idea, that just makes it so much smaller than it was previously.
Tell me if I'm reading this right. So if we want to have the joint Final Four, that then eliminates from contention the participation of cities that would have been able to hold the Final Four for women, but would not be able to accommodate the men. You would no longer see the women's tournament in Charlotte or Cleveland or Columbus or Denver or Nashville because they don't have the infrastructure to do both tournaments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, these are all cities that people have said are great hosts. It's just that they would not have the necessary components to make both events happen because, well, Columbus has a great football stadium with Ohio Stadium where Ohio State plays. It's not covered, so that really takes it out of contention. Nashville has Nissan Stadium, which is where the CMAs were held a couple years back, but it's not covered, so it's not in contention. So it's a complicated thing in many ways because these are cities that have gotten a leg up in their tourism, because of hosting the women's championship, but they wouldn't have the opportunity to do so anymore because they don't have the right infrastructure.
So going back to Indianapolis, then, Indianapolis definitely would be a candidate for this dual strategy. Would it, though, have enough tourism infrastructure, like hotel rooms, to accommodate both a men's and women's championship?
So the Indianapolis area has about 34,000 hotel rooms. Most of which are usually fully booked during the men's Final Four, that event drawing about 70 to 80,000 people per rotation that is held here. The women's semifinal and final generally attract a little more than half of that, 40 to 50,000. So it's really unclear how many hotel rooms would actually be needed, given that there'd probably be some overlap in terms of fans going to both. I did reach out to Visit Indy to try and talk to them about this. They deferred all questions to the NCAA. So the question of whether Indianapolis is able to accommodate that many people, that's definitely a big question mark right now.
So what is the reaction to this suggestion been so far from, you know, the people that it would affect the most? I mean, the NCAA Division I Women's Basketball Committee.
So Nina King is the chair of the Division I Women's Basketball Committee, and she said, as part of the announcement of this from the NCAA, that the organization is, quote, committed to continuing discussion about the concept, end quote. But she stopped short of affirming that such a proposal would actually move ahead. She went on to say, quote, finding ways to address the gender equity issues that have come to exist through the years between the Division I women's and men's basketball championships is a priority, and we are dedicated to making impactful changes. But we do know that the coaches have a very mixed reaction right now. The Women's Basketball Coaches Association did a survey of its coaches last month about this possible recommendation, and only about 55% were in favor of a combined Final Four. According to the Associated Press, which got a copy of the survey results, the survey included the participation of about 345 of the 356 WBCA members. So I got a comment from the executive director of the WBCA, Danielle Donahue. She reiterated the 55% mark, but she did say that of those who said they didn't support the concept, 71% of them are open to the possibility, depending on the plan and the WBCA's involvement in putting it together. So it sounds like some of these coaches and members might be willing to come around on this idea.
So, Mickey, when is the soonest that a combined Final Four potentially could take place? It's not like it's going to happen next year.
Correct. So the NCAA has been very careful to say that the earliest this could possibly take place is 2027, and that's largely because there's already contracts in place with other host cities through 2026, including for the men's Final Four in 2026. It's worth noting that the NCAA isn't necessarily sold on Indianapolis being, for sure, being one of the hosts or being the first host for this event. It could start in other cities and eventually get to Indianapolis if they moved ahead with it.
You know, that reminds me, Indianapolis has long had a deal with the NCAA. Indianapolis is the headquarters city for the NCAA, that it would be the host of the Final Four on a rotating basis, and you can remind me, every 5 or 6 years or so, is that right?
Yep, on an average of every 5 years through 2039, Indianapolis has a deal to host at least one men's Final Four.
So I know that this, we're very early on in this, but would this suggestion kind of throw that agreement out the window and they have to start over, depending on whether or not they think Indianapolis could pull it off?
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that. The NCAA is being very careful about its words right now, and I think they're very early on in all these discussions to even have that at top of mind right now.
What is the next thing that needs to happen as they vet this idea and try to make some kind of decision whether or not, yay or nay, to do this?
I mean, really, it's about continuing discussions between the men's and women's basketball committees, potential host cities, and just finalizing internal conversations about, is this a good idea, and is this going to accomplish the goals that we have for the men's and women's basketball tournaments? They're supposed to announce in the next year where the 2027 through 2031 Final Fours will be held. So they ideally need to have a decision made by the end of this year.
Well, let's check back in when they make a decision. Let's see what happens.
Great.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be joined by Michelle Perry. This is the IBJ Podcast.
I'm Leslie Weidenbender, the editor of IBJ, and I hope you're enjoying this episode of the IBJ Podcast. I also encourage you to check out a podcast we launched this summer, IBJ's The Freedom Forum with Angela B. Freeman. It's a look at diversity and inclusion efforts within the Central Indiana business community. Already, Angela has talked with venture capitalist Kelly Jones and entrepreneurs Audrey Taylor of Netlogix and Akilah Darden of The Darden Group. You can also check out podcasts from Inside Indiana Business, the newest member of the IBJ Media family. Each week, host Gary Dick features a community leader on his Business and Beyond podcast. And of course, you can catch up on the latest news from across the state with the Inside Indiana Business television podcast. You can subscribe to the IBJ and Inside Indiana Business episodes wherever you typically find podcasts. And watch later this year for a new podcast from IBJ's sister publication, The Indiana Lawyer. We'll have more information about that podcast soon. Now, back to the show.
At this point, I want to bring into the discussion Michelle Perry, who for 10 years, from 2002 to 2012, was director of Division I women's basketball for the NCAA. Her duties included overseeing the women's Final Four and tournament operation, financial management, and team coordination. She currently is CEO of Game Changers Consulting, which helps clients with sports event strategy, bidding, and hosting support. Michelle, thank you for making time today.
Well, thanks for having me, Mason.
Can you first give me some context for what maybe the best word for this is reckoning in women's college basketball? Historically, I assume there have been significant disparities between the men's and women's tournaments.
There have, and it's in a variety of areas, whether that's the size of the tournament field or the size of the venues in which the two championships are played in. Yeah, I mean, there have been a variety of differences over the years in terms of how the men's and women's Final Fours have played out.
So what was your reaction specifically to the suggestion to hold a joint Final Four with the men and the women's basketball tournaments playing the same weekend in the same city?
Yeah, I think it's a natural reaction, I think, for people, for the general public, and probably even some within the NCAA membership. I think it's a logical question and a logical suggestion. I think if you drill deeper, it will be interesting to see how the NCAA and how both the Division I men's and Division I women's basketball committees, which oversee both of their respective championships, how they really approach it and how they really dig deep into the logistics and the outcomes of the championships. You know, I think if your outcome and you you want to ensure that the men's and women's student athletes are treated exactly the same, then it makes sense to have a combined championship because you have one local organizing committee, you have arguably a staff that has to work collaboratively and together, and you're communicating on a regular basis and you're in lockstep in terms of details and gifting and transportation and operations and all of the things that it takes to execute a championship. It would be quite easy if that was your ultimate goal. I don't know what their ultimate goal is. I don't know how they'll measure success. You know, my fear and my concern, having experienced this championship from a lot of different seats, both on the men's Final Four and the women's Final Four side of things, I've been on the operational side from a host. So I've been at the host institution and I've been in the weeds and nuts and bolts of both championships. As you said in your introduction, I spent 10 years overseeing the championship from the NCAA standpoint. So I know it from that side. And then most recently, I spent a year or 2 years sitting in the seat of an executive director of a local organizing committee and understanding the power of this championship and the magnitude of it and the impact it can have on a community and how it can impact and change the lives of young boys and girls. And my concern and my disappointment, I guess, is that if that's the path that they choose and they choose that path on an ongoing basis, so if that becomes the norm and it's just we're going to have one championship and we're going to crown a men's and a women's champion, I'm sad for and disappointed for those cities that will never have that opportunity, who this is the biggest thing that their community can host, and they put everything into it. So they fund it, and their city government and county government, they live it and they breathe it and they embrace it, and they put every community asset into making sure that it's a tremendous experience, not just for the teams, but for the fans who have historically year after year traveled with the women's Final Four. And so I'm disappointed for them that now we whittle the number of cities that can actually host a joint championship. We whittle that down to 7 or 8 cities. And so that makes me sad.
Do you think that there's a chance that the women's tournament would be overshadowed and get less attention than it perhaps normally would if we combined it in the same weekend, the same location with the men's tournament, or would it boost it?
I think you could probably make arguments either way. I think, again, as I said, when the women's Final Four is in some of the markets that they have been in traditionally, they are the only thing happening in town. So they have the focus of every news outlet, every television station, newspapers, its front page, and they're talking about and telling the story of women's basketball. I think when you go to a combined situation, you might be in larger markets where there might be more opportunities from a media standpoint. And certainly the men's national media following is certainly larger. And so maybe then you have access to those individuals, which you might not have the opportunity to be in front of. So maybe, again, you could argue that that would be one of the benefits for the women in having a joint championship is to have the exposure to the national media. So again, I think you could certainly make arguments in both directions.
Let's say from the perspective of the fans, students, other participants, are they potentially at a disadvantage from a cost perspective? If they want to go to these events, I mean, getting a hotel in Charlotte for a weekend, I'm sure is a different experience than maybe going and getting one in Los Angeles with a men's tournament going on at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's another one of my fears. I think, you know, again, historically, the women's basketball fan has been the demographic of those fans has really skewed more toward families and older adults. And it has over the years been, for the most part, a pretty affordable event. So you could bring your family and tickets were reasonably priced. And you were going into markets where hotel rooms were, you know, between $150 and $200 a night. And again, airfares were reasonable. And my fear is that, again, when you're in this environment that you would find yourself in with the men's Final Four, it's similar to Super Bowl. You go and you're paying those kind of prices.
Now, you're familiar with Indianapolis. It's, I mean, kind of a mid-tier city. Do you think that it could adequately hold both events at the same time?
You know, I think it'll be interesting because, you know, we're talking about not only adding 4 teams to the hotel demand, but we're also talking about adding the Women's Basketball Coaches Association, their national convention. And so that's, you know, upwards of 3,000 women's basketball coaches that would come. And so, you know, I think certainly that hotel perimeter would probably be expanded and pushed to the outer reaches, which will push, again, as you're adding teams and as you're adding another national convention, it further pushes the fans to the outer reaches of Indianapolis and the surrounding area. So certainly I think that will be impacted.
So if the NCAA were to go ahead with this, is there something that you would definitely want to suggest to them that they make sure they do or take care of, if you will, to, again, I guess we don't really know what their goal would be, but to accomplish a goal that you think is worthy?
Yeah, I think I would encourage them. And certainly I think there are times where you've got to take risks and you've got to take chances. And certainly I think this is one of those times. I think we'll see it. I think there's an extraordinary amount of pressure from the membership and from external constituents to see them at least try this. You know, I would say there will certainly be some positives, without a doubt. There'll probably be some negatives, some unintended consequences that rise to the surface. I just hope that they're mindful of how do we continue to grow the game and grow the championship and continue to add value to the product of women's basketball, and that it's not stifled by being dropped into the middle of the men's Final Four environment to where it's just part of the circus, and it's not, there's nothing special about the event anymore. And so I think they've got to work really hard to make sure that equal is not the only goal, that they're mindful of the growth and where the game is, and that they figure out how to use this extraordinary platform that the Men's Final Four would provide, how they leverage that, how they maximize that to grow the game and to further elevate and amplify the good things that women's basketball represents.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. This has really been eye-opening.
Thanks for having me. It's been, college athletics has been an important part of my life, both as a student athlete, but more importantly as a career. So I'm passionate about it, and I'll be interested to watch to see how it unfolds.
My thanks again to Mickey Shuey and Michelle Perry. You can find Mickey's story about the possibility of combining the men's and women's Final Four and whether Indianapolis has what it takes to host the combo in the latest edition of IBJ. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other strong stories I want to draw to your attention. First up, the nursing shortage has grown so severe in central Indiana that some hospitals are paying millions of dollars to hire short-term traveling nurses to fill gaps during the pandemic. John Russell explains how the expense of hiring traveling nurses has grown during the pandemic. Also in this week's issue, Susan Orr reports on a startup from Telemon Corp founder Albert Chen that sells collaborative robots, also known as cobots, that can work alongside humans. And Emily Ketterer explores charges from an ultra-conservative Indiana lawmaker that GOP leaders essentially have pushed him out of office by redrawing his district in a way that would deny him re-election. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. Hey, thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast this week, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.